there. This is Cross.
I am PJ.
We are Words in Whiskey, a podcast for veteran novice readers alike. We tackle fiction novels and love to talk about what we're drinking. You should think of us as your intoxicating weekly book club.
Cross, and I have something to admit.
Do you?
I have been intentionally waiting to actually start Best of Cold to properly address this wrap up, but I have it on my Kindle.
I'm very excited.
It's staring at me.
I kind of, when I had said that last week, I was like, maybe, maybe not. I don't think that we'll talk, like, nothing would really come up on accident one way or another, but I'm super excited. Today we're joined by Mike from Mike's Book Reviews to talk about the kind of the whole trilogy, wherever we want, The Last Argument of Kings, etc. So glad to have you on the show, Mike.
Named Ben, how are you, man? Thanks so much for the invite. I appreciate it.
Yeah, we're super excited to kind of chat about everything First Law. So without further ado, PJ, what are you drinking tonight?
We've talked about how I am I'm getting into the dregs on my like main spirits quite a bit. So I did my best to create a cocktail using primarily 151 rum.
God.
So it has like a splash of something else on it.
Yeah.
So it's got 151, so an ounce and a half of 151, half an ounce of lime juice, half an ounce of simple syrup, a quarter ounce of green chartreuse, and three dashes of Angostura.
Yeah, I gotta work tomorrow. That wouldn't work for me. 151 is like I'm gonna need the weekend.
Yeah, I'm We'll see if I finish it. I'm not sure. But follow that up, or to replace that if I don't like it and don't want to finish it, I've got a Pacifico.
Nice. Easy peasy. I am having just a hot toddy. I kind of had like a quasi sick day today. Spent a lot of time on the porcelain throne. So hot toddy just to clean it out a little bit.
Just plain old coffee straight up for me.
Nice. All right. Nice.
I got to work tomorrow.
Yeah. 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 Coffee at 7:30 though. That's
I have to. People ask me, how do you drink coffee that late? I'm like, I have to do that just to make it this far. You know, that's kind of a requirement at this
point. It's stringing you forward. Yeah, totally get that. Cool. So we'll kind of get into it here. I'd love to hear, Mike, from your perspective at the very least, kind of to kick this off, your first experience with the book and the trilogy. Kind of talk us through your history with First Law.
Oh, wow. Well, see, I was one of the long, long Song of Ice and Fire sufferers. I started reading that series in 2000. A good friend of mine got sick of hearing me cry about them never coming out with new books for it. And he's like, hey, why don't you try something else? I was like, you got me to try Wheel of Time, and that wasn't really clicking for me. He's like, okay, so let me think of something a little raunchier. So he brings up this book, The Blade Itself. I'm like, what is this? I've even heard Joe Abercrombie. Is this like Abercrombie and Fitch? What is this? So I was kind of laughing about it. And he was like, you know, the third book's about to come. The first thing I asked him was like, is it finished? And he's like, yeah, the third book just came out. It's finished. So it was brand new. And I read all three of these books in about, 4 days. So I just blew right through it. It completely just blew me away. I was like, hey, this is just like Song of Ice and Fire, but without dragons, without prophecies, and with a lot more kind of sick, dark humor, I think you would call it. And it just something that's about just resonated with me so much that from the very first Glockta chapter, I was like, wow, this is like Tyrion, except more hilarious. I don't know, something about it. Maybe it's because I didn't like stairs, so I connected with Glockta like right away. But that's one of the most interesting characters I've ever read in all of fantasy. And that's really what comes back to me, is everybody has their favorites in the series. I do as well. But for me, Glockta is what I really just will never be able to forget about. I would say gnash my teeth on, but you know, he has no teeth. That'd be really rude of me to say. But yeah, it's just been an experience. And since then, it's just been, when I first started my channel, I was talking about Wheel of Time, which is kind of funny in hindsight. And I said, was it Wheel of Time that's popular, or, you know, am I okay at this? And so I said, let me talk about The First Law, because this is another series I love, and I feel like not enough people know about it. And I started talking about it, and I think Joe himself has actually told me he thinks that I've sold more of his books than his publisher has. So that's the ultimate compliment to me. So to me, it's just paying it forward, as you are doing here, getting PJ to see what is so great about this series, and I'm excited to talk about it, because I could talk about it for days.
Truly, I think it may have been your fault as well that I picked up the series to begin with back in 20,
2019, I made Why You Should Read, but I had like 300 subscribers.
I was going to say, I think it was 2019 because I had just been reading, or maybe 2020, like early 2020, because I had just read Red Rising for the first time, just kind of like seeking out other content that existed in the space. And so I think that's kind of where I stumbled into like a lot of the different people and creators, and people were like recommending this. And I was like, okay, but why should I read it? And that was sort of like, what should I expect a little bit? And
I would have a hard time believing Red Rising fans wouldn't love First Law and vice versa.
Right. Yeah. Especially since, I mean, Pierce has cited many times that Heroes is just such a direct inspiration for Dark Age.
So I would say with the Red Rising books, as people will start reading them, they're like, oh, I don't see where you're getting the First Law thing. I'm like, get to the sequels. You'll see the first one.
Yeah, it's definitely the sequel series. So with that in mind, what sort of sold each of you on reading the series? You're saying you loved Glockta, Mike, to begin with. PJ, you didn't really have a choice, but like what bit you, what kept you interested for the entire duration? What captivated attention?
You want to go first? Oh man.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, first of all, it was on our way. You and I drove from my house to Wisconsin for my wedding, and you played the first chapter, I think, just the first Glockta chapter for me.
First two, I think. I think we went through almost each POV.
Yeah,
most part, except for Pharaoh, of course, because that's so much later.
Them goddamn bears, huh?
Yeah. 16 devils.
So between that and you played me both that section and the first section of the Dark Tower of the Gunslinger.
The Gunslinger.
And made me choose which one to start with. And I think I chose the Gunslinger.
You did. Like,
no,
you
we're
did.
Doing and this I went, one first. So,
I went across the desert, and the Gunslinger followed as like the most banging first line ever. So I can see why you probably chose that. Mm-hmm.
But like, I had a hard time choosing. It was truly a toss up. They were both awesome. It was
when the first word in the series shit. Like a slogan saying shit. It's like the very first
word. He's like falling off. Yeah,
something like that.
That's funny.
He sets the tone early. Yeah. For me, it was just like the way that the characters talk to each other. I never really witnessed that. Like Song of Ice and Fire, yes, it has dark elements to it, obviously. You know, it's because it's a cruel and punishing world, and anyone is expendable. But with this, I never liked that kind of that dark humor, and that like, this is awful stuff happening to people, and I'm like laughing more in these books and everything. I mean, this is apparently, you know, the gold standard of grimdark, which I had never really heard of at that time. And I was just having a good time with it. So for me, it's like you can pick up these books and just read a line and you know what character it is because the way that he defines his character. So for me, as a character first reader, that's what kept me just really, really into this.
Yeah. It's hard to say. The first spoken word of dialogue is shit. The first line is Logan plunged through the trees, bare feet. Yeah, he's falling. But the first spoken dialogue being shit, I mean, it's just, it does set the tone for sure. I totally agree with you. The characters are unparalleled. I mean, Joe's character work is truly first among many, and the greatest of so much fantasy and fiction in general. It's crazy to me still to this day. I think that obviously Joe does well. Joe has sold, I mean, the rights to Best Sword Cold, and has produced a number of things, and you know, all these other pieces floating out there. But I'm so shocked that this hasn't like grabbed the zeitgeist in the same way that something like Game of Thrones has for people that are there. Some of that has to do with people being readers or not, but I don't know.
That's why I try to sell it to everybody. I'm like, if you're into fantasy, dark fantasy, adult fantasy at all, this is the first one. I go to this before I go to Song of Ice and Fire because I feel like I do think it deserves to be like the household name within the fantasy community. It really does.
Yeah. And it's completed, which certainly doesn't hurt.
That doesn't hurt. Yeah. Easy sales point.
I'm gonna go ahead and show my colors as a an inexperienced reader here, but are there many other examples of stories from multiple POVs where the non-dialogue part of the perspective is still in the voice of the character, like very distinctly? I don't know a better way to describe
it. You're talking like just the third person limited perspective being so clearly in each voice, right?
Yeah.
I'm multi-POV. You know, I mean, it makes me think of something like Frank Herbert's Dune, you know, where most of that book is Paul's inner monologue, you know, or the character's inner monologue. But I mean, there are a couple of different point of views, but never like this. Like I would say, like Song of Ice and Fire obviously would be the staple of that for me, but I don't think they ever had just so much inner monologue. Like just Glockta's inner monologue is just like amazing. And Logan all the time, you know, still alive, stuff like that, you know, that, you know, I can't think of anything close like that.
Yeah, the only writer in general that I think that I can think of at the very least is there are some King novels that approach kind of the same thing as he gets into a character's voice, you know, momentarily. But that's not chapter. That's not POV.
Maybe
that's
it.
Series.
Yeah, maybe yeah,
it's a good example.
POVs, yeah.
Yeah. Stand. The Stand was my thought when that popped up. But yeah, I mean, it's not common to say the least. And very much at the very least, not as well defined.
This is where I'm jealous that you guys can audio, because everyone tells me how great the audio is. And I just can't pay attention to it. And I've listened to clips just because people tell me how amazing it is. And one thing I'll say that I did get out of it was it's really interesting that Glockta's spoken dialogue will be slurred because of his teeth, but like his inner monologue, he won't have a lisp or any slurred speech. I think that's a very, very clever idea. So props to the audio guy on that one.
It's one of the, I mean, truly, Stephen Pacey is just one of the best audiobook narrators that there is. Obviously, if you can't pay attention to it, is what it is. Yeah, but the prose is so brilliant on the page.
All them years of blocking out my kids, I just can't turn it off, you know? So I just, with me, with fantasy, it's like there's so many moving parts. And I feel like if you miss one thing, you're going to be lost. And I try. It just doesn't work for me. So listening ADD is a thing.
Yeah, and you always have to, like, rewind. For me, I kind of have the same problem. Like, I always, even when I'm listening to audiobook, as long as it's on the car, I keep a physical copy around so that I can go back and reference things often. Because, you know, there are so many, like, small details. And
yeah, I'll see some of my video comments. I'll see people drop, like, a word. And I'm like, what are they doing? Oh, that's what they think the character's name is, because they've never seen it written.
Yeah. So I've learned never actually picked up the book.
Yeah.
There was one early on in the show, I think it was Baez, that someone had written in like our Discord and whatnot for patrons. Someone had typed out Baez's name with like an I in the middle. And I was like, oh, God, no. We gotta have a conversation here. Speaking of Baez, good little question here. Who is among the Magi that we have, the Maguses, in this story? Who's your favorite non-Baez Magi?
Oh, God. Who's the one that's with Pharaoh at the beginning?
Yule Wang, like, yeah.
Peace, Pharaoh. I love him. He was great. Yeah. He was great, you know, for his reduced role that there was. But he was great while he was there, just for putting up with, for being able to calm down Pharaoh, which is not possible, I don't think. Fucking pink.
for a similar reason, I would pick him with one caveat. But to go into Yule Wang, he is also, like we talked about Crossland, the only Magi that truly shows some selflessness, shows some, like, actually trying to do good in the world.
Yeah, as everybody else is looking out for number one.
Self-serving.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
There's very few of those selfless characters in this series, if we're being honest here.
Truly.
The ones that are kind of shine through. Like, did you get lost? You're not here.
You wandered over from the Chronicles of Narnia. That seems weird. Right.
Yeah. But is it Zacharias?
Yeah.
From an audiobook perspective, Stephen Pacey's delivery of Zacharias's dialogue is just so booming and larger than life, and it's hard to forget that.
Yeah, the giving Zacharias almost the like Gandalf treatment is fun, like somewhere between Gandalf and Radagast the Brown, you know, kind of. In particular, I think I like Zacharias quite a bit, even in the very limited context that we get, just because of the weird like bird thing that he's got going on with like controlling the birds. I don't know. It's another moment of sort of the bizarre magic of this world, of which goes so, you know, underexplained intentionally, that I just really appreciate. And each time he just highlights like a different weird mystery for me about how all that works.
Well, speaking of Baez, I mean, did PJ, you say you're kind of like an inexperienced reader on stuff like this. When I read the ending of Last Argument of Kings, I was completely blown away by Baez. Like I didn't see it coming at all. I think now when I read a series like this, I would expect something like that. At the time, I'd never seen it. I was so pissed off at this ending for like a year. And then I was like, you know what? Actually, it was quite brilliant. You know, after I thought about it for a while. But at the time, I think I just never really experienced it where I felt like, did the bad guys win? That's kind of how I felt it, you know? So did that completely take you off guard? Did he trick you, making you think this was the Gandalf character? And then he just does what he does?
A little bit. But I think because of the way that we tackled this series, so slow and so methodically.
Yeah, time to think about it.
Yeah. We had a lot of time to think about. I had a lot of time.
No, going back and thinking when he actually manipulated that contest to make Luther win, Giselle win that contest. Like, oh, yeah, okay, I see what's going on here. But the first time I was going through it, not a clue. I didn't expect that at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was in the same boat. I definitely saw like a lot of like kind of writing on the wall with Baez, but like no idea on like the depth to which it went. Yeah, I was like, oh, sure. you're just a messy wizard. That's fine. And then it turns out that he is in fact the puppeteer of everything.
Yeah. Wow.
Even having some inkling and like some like catching on to some hints here and there, it was still like 20 layers deeper than I thought it would be.
Yeah, the genuine shock that you
all
get
the way down.
Exactly. The shock that you got out of the Valentin Balk reveal. I'll never like, oh man, reliving that even through you this time was excellent. Because that's a shocker.
Mm-hmm.
That's because I think there's so many shocks for me with Last Argument of Kings. First off, like in the first third, I mean, whoa, all of a sudden, Jezahl's king? What the hell? You know, yeah. That blew me away. But really, I think the Logan's fight is just one of the best in the series. I think DeJoe does the battle in the circle better than just about anyone not named Bernard Cornwell, I think. He's probably the best at it. And every time the Bloody Nine shows up, it's like, y'all fucked, you know, because the Bloody Nine's here now. It makes you actually, you know, you start being scared for the other named men, you know. What a character, right? What a great idea the Bloody Nine is. And that's why everybody who asks me all the time, hey, Mike, who would win in a fight between this person and this person? If they ever say Logan, I say Logan before they're done asking the question. I will never. The only person I would pick to beat Darrow from Red Rising would be the Bloody Nine. That's the only person I would pick on a one-on-one fight versus Darrow, because Darrow would cheat, but Bloody Nine don't care. Yeah. He'd win anyway.
See, I'd pick Lysander, but I get it. but you're right. You're right. I definitely agree. I think that Logan is such a fascinating character. And I think especially, you know, his exploration in the back half is after he becomes king is interesting. But in the front part, as he's kind of dealing with holding out and waiting for the Union forces up in the hills, and then coming out of that duel, and the way that like you mentioned, that duel in the circle is so good.
What was the character's name he was fighting? It's been years since I've read this now.
The Feared.
The Feared. Fear and the Feared. Yeah. Oh, man. Yep. Like you couldn't hurt him, so they had to get the witch. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Such a great scene. Great
exactly. Scene. Exactly. And so cutting between those two moments.
Black Dow. Just like fucking so witch. Yeah, Black Dow is something else, too. And that's amazing. Mm-hmm. He does with all those named men. You don't really think there's very much about it, but they just get more and more as the series went on. And like every one of them, I felt like you. Obviously, Dogman was a POV character, but all the other ones, I actually kind of really like when Three Trees went down. I was like tore up a little bit. So, it was just really well developed characters, like every one of the little side characters as well. I mean, even when I went back and reread it, I was like, oh, what's the thing about Forley the Weakest? Was the weakest?
Yeah,
and I was like, oh, you know? Even though he was there for like a cup of coffee, you know. But I think he just develops his character so well that it doesn't have to. They don't even have to have a POV to really for them to leave a mark on you.
They get deeper and deeper as their line gets thinner and thinner as we move through the story.
we've talked about them quite a bit, and I think obviously really well-written characters, but also resonated very well with us being Minnesota boys. Just for some reason, that northern sensibility transcends dimensions, I guess.
Yeah, too cold for me. Yeah, way too cold.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I've fled to North Carolina, and my parents have fled to Dallas. So, you know, in kind of both regards.
I'm in Texas because it's about as hot as it can get here with still being in the States.
Yeah.
I do not like the cold. Yeah.
But being raised in that, the northern Minnesotan sensibilities are pretty, it's so evident from the Northman perspective.
So, PJ, I'm really interested in PJ, since this is like you're kind of like your first dip into something like this. Did the character of West, did he become like irredeemable to you, or did he actually redeem himself through the course of the series? I've had some people like with this first time they read anything this dark, they're like, okay, as soon as he hits Artie, I'm out. I'm on this character. He's irredeemable. As soon as he pushes that dude off the cliff, I was like, hell yeah, West.
Yeah, there was a lot. I was very conflicted on West through the whole thing. Especially because of, like, there is a sort of unspoken apology that he has with Artie towards the end, but there's no real, like, actual atonement for what he did.
Maybe I got softened up because of him and Glockta's friendship, you know, because Glockta didn't have very many friends. So when he had one, it was like, okay, this must be something actually special here. But yeah, people ask me that a lot, like, you know, why do you like Wes at the end? I'm like, I don't know. I mean, Jamie Lannister pushes a kid out the window in the first book, and by book three, I'm begging for George not to kill him off, you know? So, I mean, it's just like, if you're a good character writer can do that, you know, and make you, hey, everybody makes mistakes, right? some are worse than others.
I similarly, West was, even in my first read, was one of my favorite characters. And in the moment is sort of more like a stain than it is like anything else. Like it's just it's a moment in time. It was a big mistake. And I think by the end, while he doesn't atone necessarily, I think he is otherwise the like moral pillar in a big way for a lot of things, considering everyone else. But yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Jezahl has the best arc in the trilogy, though. I mean, this guy's like going from looking in the mirror, saying why are there ugly people in the world, while he's admiring his chin, to you actually like feeling bad for the guy at the end, you know? So I don't know. Mm-hmm. I love that character arc for him. It's really good. And defining feature is that he's beautiful. So, of course, we're just going to break his face, you know, and then see what happens to him once he's as ugly as everybody else. I thought it was a great, great arc. And we'll say nothing about what happens after this series.
PJ, in the end, how did you feel about sort of the overall arcs, right, of the accumulation, right? There's sort of this big question, Mike, that we've been debating too, that I think is raised by Joe throughout. It's can people change? Were there any characters that you found did or didn't, or like exceptional arcs or otherwise, that kind of stand out to you?
I think I think even if they end in similar circumstances or with similar mindsets, there are still changes, and there are still they're coming at it with additional information and additional understanding, and maybe even a desire to do something different. Like Jezahl at the end, talking with Glockta, kind of pleading with him to go against the word of Baez and change the tax code and things like that. So he's becoming or has become more selfless, especially in this last like third of the book or third of last ninth of the series, I guess.
Sure.
The last third of this last book. But he's still in the position of someone unchanged on a higher level. So it's, I think more granularly, yes, but they're being pulled by nature into positions where nothing really changes, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally makes sense. I think that you can kind of draw a similar comparison to Logan, right? I think that what's interesting is that Logan does feel impacted by his friendships, but him like resuming his time in the North continues to kind of unwind it. So it's the potential for change, I think, is kind of in the end where I disagree with Joe. I think he shows a lot of the potential for change, but I don't think any of those characters fully, you know, go the other direction.
Who's the guy that gets pushed off the mountain by West? That character had no redeeming qualities whatsoever.
Yeah. is that Ladislaw? It was Ladislaw, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that's the only one I could think of that has like is no different from when they enter before they exit stage right. You know, I think that'd be the one that I go to.
There's
no real change. Because I think everybody's kind of out of Nicole Koska's pretty much the same the whole way through. You know?
It's fair.
Yeah. But I mean, if you know, you know. Koska's a character, I think. But And Pharaoh, I don't really think necessarily Pharaoh changed a lot. She's always going to be pissed off. And I mean, that's what we love about her, I think.
And I think that her being pissed off was actually a good thing in the end. And her not changing makes a lot of sense. I mean, for so many reasons for her character.
We do. And maybe we just weren't exposed to a situation where this would have shown its head. But we do see some glimmers of mercy in her adversaries.
Yeah.
Like her basically asking for reasons why she should spare people, which feels out of character for her, but she does it a couple different times.
I'll say one thing for Logan Ninefingers. Say he's a lover. Or call him a lover. Everyone
just spit out my toddy.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, that one's a great little moment that happens. I mean, their entire relationship is depressing, I would say. I'm glad, of course, that it's included, but man, the like near misses of them is just such a good example of how they get, you know, kind of trapped in the same cycle and circle of things. You have your list of questions, PJ. You gonna fire one off?
I do.
Yeah, I've got your massive list.
So I guess we can go back to West a little bit. Am I right in thinking he's kind of the only character that has raised his station through like merit alone.
Like hard work.
like actual hard work, actual merit, despite all of his blood working against him.
Think about it. I guess Glockter kind of just goes there because everybody else is more crooked than he is. So he just kind of keeps failing upwards a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then, we see how Jezahl just kind of falls into that shit. He's the king. Okay. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I think
even Logan's propped up through and saved by, Baez via paying off, Bathod.
Mm. Yeah.
We learn at the end.
Yeah. I think the only other argument would be Logan, but I mean, the Bloody Nine just, you know, eats what it does.
Black Dow sees his moment and he goes for it, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. That's fair.
He didn't work hard.
Yeah.
He worked hard by living. He was one of the few that lived out of that group.
Survived.
Yeah.
I guess if you say if there's a moral center, I think maybe Dogman would be the moral center, I guess you'd say, but he's probably the most, if you say there's a morally good character in the book, I think he might be about it.
Yeah. Where neutral is good.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like a glowing beacon.
He stands out as a particularly, I mean, like, what a fun character in so many different ways. Dogman is, having read through the series a couple of times now, Dogman remains one of my absolute favorites, I think, from the POV perspective. And, like, he fails in a lot of different moments to act appropriately, and he's used for comedy beats. And I don't know. I am a fan, a massive fan of Dogman.
So. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. Bad name aside. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, what was the first time to get some people into the series? You're like, there's a character called Dogman. Are you serious, Mike? I'm like, just accept it. It's okay.
It's a nickname. He's a named man. It's important.
Well, he ate some ladies' tits off.
Or he smells good. We're not sure.
And this is the good character, guys. This is the morally good character.
Yeah. Yeah. Tough.
Mike, are you by chance a fan of System of a Down?
Sure. You know, when they used to put out albums, yeah.
Right, exactly.
I tell people I don't keep up with like the music genre as much as the music thing as much as I used to with all my favorite bands, but every once in a while I'll be like, you know, 4 years has gone by. Surely you gotta have something new out by now. Nope.
System never does, yeah.
Nah. Yeah. System of a Note. But yeah.
I think Serge, the frontman, just released a book, so he's been on like a media tour. So I watched an interview with him recently, and this came into my head thinking that he would be, I think, proud of both of our kings at the end of this, with the hearkening to the lyric, "Why do they always send the poor? Why don't presidents fight the war?" With both of our kings really doing their best to be in the front of all of the fighting and like leading by example. That's not so much a question. That's just kind of a commentary. I should have had a question to go along with this.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that Serge would be proud of them all, without a doubt. I wanted to talk briefly, thinking about both the kings. You know, obviously, Logan's reign is cut dramatically short. What would we imagine a reign of Logan would look like in the North?
I think he'd have got bored and abdicated that thing within a month. He can't sit still. I don't think he's the type of character that could put down roots. He just has to be roaming the land. I think that's just, especially if he's like focused on trying to become a better man, trying to change, trying to be a good person. I think that he knows that Logan's of the type that knows that absolute power is going to corrupt absolute. And he would probably just be like, well, I don't know if I leave, Black Dallas probably going to take this. I don't know if that would be better, you know, but yeah, I think he'd got bored.
Yeah,
you take a header, and we'll never know.
The one reason why I think I disagree with that is because of that conversation he has with Dogman, which touches on being a better man, but also touches on what's good for the North. And I think he would try to intertwine them a little bit. Like, making the North a better place is what would make him a better man. So what he talks about making things grow after all the violence. So I like to think maybe he would try to lead the North in a way that makes it a more hospitable, less war ravaged area. And by virtue of that, turning himself into a better man.
Yeah, I mean, that, I think there's a rationale there. I do think that in the very end, though, he shows his colors where he's like, just Dogman, get weapons, right? With like the agreement and kind of leaving him there.
Yeah.
Because that is kind of the question, you know, before he's got better aspirations. How do we think Jizal will be as a king? This is maybe more directly for PJ because Mike and I obviously
this is
know.
For me. But I know this is for me.
You want me to tell you what I thought when I finished this?
Yes,
he's just a puppet king. I mean, you could see that anytime you thought he was going to go on his own, Baez was just going to slap him down. And we know Jizal. I mean, he's had a hell of an arc in the series, but I would go far from saying he's grown a spine. You know, I think that he realized, okay, I try to step out of line, I'm going to get slapped down. So I think he's the type that's just like, I'll do what's necessary, but I'm not going to make waves.
He seized some opportunities earlier on when he knew, like, Baez can't do anything right now. Like, so he took a little bit of ground here and there, but that was before he got, like, actually magically slapped around by Baez.
Well, thanks to Galacta, he's actually going to get some tail. So, how about that? The wife, he didn't want to do him. So, right. You know, hey.
Right.
Galacta took care of that.
That's true. Like, Galacta alludes to the idea that if they play it small, they might be able to make some headway here or there. I think it'll take a while before Jizal feels comfortable pushing for something like that. So maybe it's Galacta doing it on his own.
God, it's hard not to say shit right now.
Yeah, now you know how I feel.
You know, I hate spoiling anything for everybody, but I'm just like...
For all of the first trilogy of Red Rising, for sure, and I think maybe a little bit beyond that, Crossland would not do video calls during these recordings.
Yeah, your face would give away too much.
So bad, yeah, at the face. I was very afraid. I was like, no, we'll get better by not doing video. Also, because I don't want to lie to your face. it's tough. I mean, yeah, there's definitely notes there early on from like Galacta being sort of like the shackles on Jizal as a king. But they appear to, at the very least, have a relationship in which they can share things back and forth and information. You know, there's some push and give, maybe in certain degrees, but obviously there was not going to be any degree or any give on the argument around taxing banks. Like, that was very clearly a no-go.
At the very least, they both understand that they're both puppets, so they can speak freely about that, which will be refreshing, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Jizal doesn't know that Galacta is Baez's puppet necessarily, but, you know.
Yeah, he does.
I don't think so.
He was straight up told, like, you're going to listen to everything that...
Yeah.
Because he's speaking for me.
Sure. That doesn't mean
Jizal's kind of scared of Galacta, too. Yeah. Who wouldn't be?
Yeah. He's a scary-looking motherfucker.
Aren't you the guy that used to cut off fingertips? No, thanks. I'm good.
Man, speaking of fingertips, that just reminded me of Severard and the death of our two practicals. And just sort of the brutal end that they both receive.
It cut me deep when that betrayal happened. It cut me a little bit. It's like, oh man, these are Galacta's boys. Oh.
Mm-hmm. Was there any that particularly upset you? Which was worse?
Probably Frost. I think Frost. Yeah. I don't know. I'd have to reread it for a third time, you know, I'm trying to stop rereading stuff. It's hard because every time I talk about this, it makes me want to reread it again.
It's one of those series. That's where audiobooks are nice, is because you can just pop it in and listen.
You're not worried about missing anything. You should really try the audiobook.
Especially in a reread.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, because you know it all. But Severard's death, I think, is the one that upsets me the most personally, and it being Frost that kills him.
Yeah.
So Frost's betrayal is worse ultimately, but I think Severard's betrayal makes sense. Frost is the one where it still doesn't click to me to this day why Frost is doing what he's doing, but money is money, I guess. Anyone could be bought.
I think the death that actually cut me the most is West, though. I think that's
oh,
that cut the hardest. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing we haven't talked about, which is within the first act, is the reveal at the House of the Maker. Ptolemy is Kwai, in sort of this sort of larger reveal of her being in the party this whole time, with being the Maker's daughter. How'd you guys react to that?
There was, so the biggest thing for me that misdirected me, like through the entire series, like I had been thinking about this the whole fucking time, was how sick Kwai was from the beginning. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, this illness, whatever's taking him, has morphed into this like sullenness throughout. And I had it in my head, and I was convinced, like so convinced that I wouldn't even consider that it was not connected, that like that illness that develops through the time that Kwai is with Logan right away was like something. And I assumed something sinister. I assumed something demonic, truly. Mm-hmm. And to be completely unrelated was like, all right, fuck.
You'll be honest, 5 years ago is when I did my reread, and I'm a little fuzzy. What happened to Brother Longfoot?
He gets captured. Brother Longfoot gets captured by the Inquisition at the end of Before They're Hanged / the beginning. It's kind of off page. And then he ends up walking the sewers, like guiding them through the sewers. And then he's let go, it appears. Glockta actually does.
Okay. Now, I think I'm getting Kwai and Longfoot confused. I remember I thought that Brother Longfoot was kind of annoying. And then I was like, oh, but when he dies, I felt bad for him. But now I'm thinking that was actually Kwai.
So yeah, Kwai was also kind of annoying, to be fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Kwai was the apprentice, and then when they're on the road, I think the big thing there is that like constantly retorts and recites different things that like it feels like he shouldn't exactly know all of the intimate details of, with like the Maker and Baez's story, and recounts it in a way that like appeases his ego. I don't know. It's interesting.
The House of Maker, remember the first book where like they're going downstairs forever and then they're like way up in the sky and it like blows their mind or something. Yep. Yeah. I think that's what really just at first I was like, what the hell am I reading right now, man? What is this?
Specifically, there's no stairs, which was what got
me. Yeah, like, no stairs, hallway. But then they end up like way up top. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Overlooking the city.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. A massive hallway, basically, that just runs on forever. Which is, and really again, just a ramp, if you think about it, Glockta.
All come those on. Red flags about Baez, and I completely mm-hmm. missed them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Ptolemy is. Right, right. And rereading this again with PJ, getting to experience a lot of those things firsthand, I'm like, how didn't you? Why didn't you? How do I write or talk about this week to week without, you know, like breaking in a lot of cases?
See, for me, it'd be more of like characters that have bigger roles in future books, not saying anything about them, you know, because there are characters that are almost like a cameo, basically, in this first trilogy that are big time players in future books. And blink and you'll miss it, you know, but when you go back and reread it, you're like, oh, you know, even if you've read the sequel books as well, you're really excited to see some of those.
Yeah. As they come back front and center, it's nice. And it's hard not to hint at some of those things, especially because in some cases, those cameos sets up their whole arc so well, in a couple of those circumstances. So it's like, oh, well, I need to make sure and encourage PJ to talk about that on his own without me leading the question.
I'll be interested how you feel about the sequels, because I feel like the standalone books is everyone has like such a different opinion. It's like it seems like everybody likes the heroes, but people either love Best Served Cold and hate Red Country, or they love Red Country and they can't stand Best Served Cold. So I'll be interested where you fall.
That's interesting. Where do you land on the standalones?
I love Best Served Cold. It's Joe Abercrombie writing The Count of Monte Cristo, which is one of my favorite books of all time. It's amazing. I love it. I love a good tale for revenge where you're going back and hunting down your enemies. That's stuff that I am crazy about.
Yeah.
The Heroes is probably one of the most, I don't know, and I don't try not to be insulting when I say this, but to me, it's like reading it, it's like the most realistic depiction of war I've ever seen. Saying that as someone who's never experienced war, thank God. Mm-hmm. But I don't like to be insensitive with that. But with me, with Red Country, maybe I feel different on a reread, but that was the one that just didn't click with me. I don't know. And looking at it now and being like, okay, he's doing the old spaghetti westerns. I get what he was doing here. Mm-hmm. It's just, it was the one where like there was some characters that just didn't land for me in that one. So I think on a reread, I'd probably like it more than I did the first time. But yeah, I'm a Best Served Cold, hell yeah. Red Country, eh.
Yeah, I'm a best served cold hell yeah. I think what's interesting is that before I read Red Country, I read Sharp Ends. And Sharp Ends sets up a lot of the characters in Red Country really well, just from like a high level. We're going to read it after, PJ, so I'm sorry I'm giving you this
Sharp
sort of highlight.
Sharp Ends has a Logan story that's amazing.
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. I mentioned briefly of all of the spoilers that we do get to see the Dagoskin charge as well. Or not the Dagoskin charge, rather, but Glockta's charge. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Back when he had teeth.
Yep.
And two working legs. Yeah.
Yeah. And a horse and a sword. The Sword King reveal too, when he kills, who does he kill? Oh, it's Frost. When he kills Frost is so good. Mm. He's been tapping away with that the whole time. How good. As far as it goes with the magic, I'm curious, and PJ has been a very deep lover and appreciator. Again, PJ, for your context, Mike, PJ had read nearly nothing since high school for the most part, but we enjoyed the same stories, so that was kind of our preface to getting into a lot of these things and for me bringing him through a lot of these series. PJ fell in love with Sanderson's writing style of hard magic systems. PJ is a physicist. I'm talking for him now, but an engineer, so love those things. How'd you feel about art in general?
I love it. Yeah. I am very much a soft magic person. I respect the hell out of what Brandon Sanderson's done. I think it's very compelling. I think it's incredible how he makes his magic systems, you know, a character. I love that. For me, I grew up reading Lord of the Rings, and it's like, why can Gandalf do magic? Because he's a fucking wizard. That's why he can do magic. I don't need to know how he does it, you know? So for me, I've always been like, oh, hey, cool, art. They're doing magic. Cool. I don't need to know. I don't even know. And I even like the way that Sanderson does it in Mistborn, where he's like, if you want to, you can follow along in this elemental table chart. You can understand what they're doing. Or you can just be like, hey, they're doing magic. You can just kind of roll with it. You know, I like the way that he does it in that series. So this, with me, magic, less is more. Less is more. Mm-hmm. But I know amongst the fantasy community, especially in the reign of Brandon Sanderson, that's a very, very unpopular opinion.
I personally am right there with you. I appreciate hard magic systems as an idea, but I think that it often hems things in too much.
Yeah, when you start trying to explain the science of it to me, rhythm of war, then we're just like, no, stop this. Yeah. I don't want to go back to biology and science class.
I really didn't need a 150-page lecture on anti-void light and void light.
But I understand if you're a physicist, that's probably compelling shit, you know? You know, I'm a finance guy, but I don't want to read about tax codes and shit. Hey, tell me about that medieval spreadsheet you got there, you know?
The abacus.
Exactly.
That's funny because there is tax stuff in Last Argument for Kings.
Actually.
That's true.
Right.
I'm doing my best to suppress the part of my brain that wants to dig deeper into magic system or the lack of magic system. And I think I'm doing an okay job of it. I'm
suppressing it.
I'm suppressing that need to.
I'm not saying Joe isn't talented enough to do it. I just think he knows where his strengths are, and it's character interaction, I think. So I just feel like maybe he just didn't think he needed it. I don't know. I'm going to read The Devils next, his new book. I'm going to be reading that soon because I was lucky enough to get a review copy of it. I can't wait. It's like my most anticipated book of next year. And Patrick told me that he does dabble a little bit in that one. So we'll see. We'll see how he does.
Interesting. I think that art is well explained in a way in which it kind of has soft rules to it, like using art drains you, using it is touching the other side, it's breaking, you know, the first law and sort of the hypocrisy there, but at the same time, like, it's not more than that, you know. It's never overbearing. It's definitely never rhythm of war levels of exhaustion, of which I don't, man.
PJ, what'd you think of the eaters?
Ooh.
That's nightmare shit, ain't it? I guess I read enough zombie books, so I'm like,
that's some crazy shit. Yeah. That's some. So we talked a little bit about we've made comparisons often to Lord of the Rings, and that's the part that feels like a totally more unique spin divergence a little bit from some of the Tolkien-esque tropes.
Yeah, Shanka are very clearly orcs and things like that. But I didn't remember anything like the Eaters.
I kind of feel like personally, I kind of feel like the Eaters equate a little bit to like the Nazgul, a little bit, especially because it is the evil side. It is the other side. But then it's next to reveal that our guy has a Nazgul, you know, in the end with your.
I thought you'd go with Army of the Dead, you know, because they just
Army of the Dead,
mow
sure.
through everybody. But that's interesting. I mean, didn't he say he wrote this to kind of be like a deconstruction of Lord of the Rings, you know? And I didn't know that, but when I went in, that's why I was expecting Baez to be, hey, the wizard's always the leading the band is always the good guy, you know? So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
You couldn't fool me now, but back in 2008, yeah, I was, you know, summer child still, you know?
Yeah, taken advantage of by the book. I also was unaware of that, but I sort of like pick up on small things throughout. And I was like, huh, this does seem to be playing with like in the Lord of the Rings sandbox, but not as clearly as like, I don't know, a lot of like David Gemmel is. But
I've only read one Gemmel. I read Legend. That was right.
You should definitely read as a recommendation. It's not the Bulgariad. Everyone says the Bulgariad. They're wrong. Ravenheart is the, I think the first book and Stormrider is the second. It's sort of like a 4-book series.
Is that Gemmel?
Two duologies. It's Gemmel.
Okay.
But it takes place kind of in a vague approximation of Scotland.
Bulgariad, isn't that Eddings?
Is that Eddings? It is Eddings. You're right.
I never read that either. I have it. So that's why I know. Cause people constantly ask me why I haven't read Eddings.
Yeah.
And then they tell me don't read it because it won't be the same to you now. And I'm like,
yeah, a lot of the Draenei, not the Bulgarian.
Yeah, Draenei, I read Legend, and the thing about Legend was not to completely derail here.
Yeah.
I loved Druss. It was like when Druss was on the screen, I loved it. When Druss wasn't on the page, so people have said, you know, there are Druss books I can go back to. So I said I'd probably go backwards instead of forwards in that series.
Yeah, so the series that I recommend isn't the Draenei. I personally didn't like it really that much, and I read it originally. It's the Regante.
Yeah. Yes, is the, I have those the on my Kindle as well.
Yeah, Sword in the Storm and whatnot is very evocative of similar things for similar reasons. So that's where I like started to see some of the similar parallels between Lord of the Rings-isms.
Which me, that's talking about John Gwynne. When I talked about John Gwynne, everyone's like, if you like him, you got to read Gimmel. So that's what put it on my radar. But you're telling me that Joe might have had some...
I think there's a little bit here in particular. I think that the Sword in the Storm in particular is very evocative of the blade. It's like the magical blade that he picks up, the Maker's Sword. And I think that it's kind of deconstructing the magical sword trope, which is also something that the other book does. So, just from the outset, I think that there were a couple of obvious inspirations that I saw littered throughout. But the most obvious, of course, is Lord of the Rings.
These titles are S tier, aren't they? I mean, the blade itself alone, just that I mean, the blade itself doesn't cite violence. I'm just like, well, I'm in. I'll read this. Yeah, I mean, that's great. That's a banger. So I love these titles.
Both the titles and the extended version of the quotes that the titles come from. Or the story behind the title in the case of the last argument. Like, so good. Just so good.
They're great titles. And that continues with the Age of Madness, the sequel trilogy. That's good stuff. Yeah. Those one-liners for you, but they're great. Yeah.
Those one-liners are really good. And I'm even kind of like sad that he wasn't able to go with the original title for the final book. Because that quote is so good. I think it was the Hateful Machine.
It was a time I would remember because I used to read his website blogs when he put those out back in the day.
Yeah, something like that. But again, so good, and he's the king of titles in many ways.
That's why I like his new book's called The Devils. Really, that's it.
Simple, so simple to start a new trilogy. Yeah, sells it with ease. The kind of one of the points that I like about the story is that we never actually see Kal'ul as a villain. How do you imagine that man existing in the world, as it were? How do we picture him similar to Mamoon on kind of a high horse, or what do we think of Gurgul?
I thought of him. Basically, I'm a big Dark Tower fan. I just think about like the Man in Black, you know, something like that. That's kind of how I picture it.
Yeah,
I imagine someone truly like I imagine someone confined. By their own decision, but just, I don't know, sort of running their empire like the commander of an RTS game.
like a Civ game.
Kind of.
Yeah.
But just kind of a stationary overlord, as it were.
Guys playing Age of Empires 1.
Basically.
I never played those. I played Civ. I didn't play Age of Empires. I didn't have a good enough computer.
No, fair.
The time period.
Yeah. I mean, Civ's a good comparison too, but yeah, the man, he is kind of playing 4X, isn't he? He's just removed. He's just looking at it like, oh yeah, I'll send over my 100 words.
I'm still convinced take care of that it. 90% of the fantasy books out there were just that author's D&D game. Like, that's all it was. That's where they came up from. That's because, I mean, I think there are some like Malazan, like that started with D&D, a campaign and stuff like that. But there's like several books I've read recently where I'm like, this is totally your D&D game. There's no way. There's no way it's not.
Christopher Buhlmann's recent couple of books, Daughters of War and
yeah, I just got
the other one.
Daughters of War.
Very clearly D&D inspired. Black Tongue Thief, that's the other one. Yeah, there are so many fantasy worlds. And even, I mean, Joe said that Logan's a barbarian. He was just trying to write a barbarian and like figure out, you know, write a subversive barbarian story. And
yeah, when I had him on the channel, I actually asked him, I was like, was there any inspiration from Conan? He was like, no. I was like,
it's like I watched more stuff than I read. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Conan's interesting.
Conan's great.
Oh, I meant is like a comparison to Logan. I hadn't thought about that directly. Like,
I don't think Conan would ever be worried about being a good man or not. He's just going to do what he wants to do.
Yeah,
don't get in the way.
Which is the Bloody Nine at a certain degree, you know.
I have a bright red Dodge Challenger, and I named it the Bloody Nine. That's how influential how influential the series was to me. Yeah, wild.
Nice.
I tried to name my dog Glockta. My wife was like, what? No.
We're going to do call him Glock to come over here?
Yeah. You call him Sand. Like Wes calls him Sand. It sounds weird. But no, she said no. She vetoed that one. But I always
tried to name the dog in the end.
I was like, look, you wouldn't let me name my kids weird shit. You know, I want to name my first one John Targaryen. You know, and she said, no, absolutely not. You know, and she,
was that a first name or first and middle name?
First and middle name, John Targaryen.
Okay.
Yeah. She's like, no, you know, the kids have to keep this name after you're dead, you know? So I was like, no. So yeah, I was like, that's fair. But I was like, okay, when I get a dog, and she overruled that. We ended up naming him Ash after Evil Dead, you know, but that's
good.
Part, it was as far as I could push it, was Ash. Which we had double sold because my kid thought we named him Ash after the Pokemon trainer. So it worked for the whole family. It worked for the whole family. But
there we go.
Yeah, I guess now at this point I got to get like some goldfish or something to name them fantasy characters. You know, that's what I got to do.
to get your first law characters into the family.
You know, these characters have such weird names, but they're so unique. I just like, you can go to so many fantasy worlds and be like, oh, well, you know, that's a name that sounds like it could be in any universe. But these, I'm just like, I don't know. There's something unique about it. Jazal Dan Luther, you know, Zandan Glockta. There's something to me that just resonated with these titles that they have in these books that just, I don't know, nothing since maybe like Tolkien, where I felt like it feels unique to that original world. You know, so am I giving it too much credit? I don't know. It's just something for me. I can never see another book where there's someone named Glockta, you know?
Right.
The most normal name is also spelled weird.
Yeah, Logan.
Gives me a little red underline every time I type it.
The E gets the underline, yeah.
Yeah, I think that like he creates these like nice little subcultures, right? And like the whole idea of like named men gives him this license to like take out these very strange names. We were talking about this mostly, I think, in like The Blade itself, because they popped up a little bit more frequently. But some of the like just obvious people of whom are named like
Forley, you know, the Weakest. Know,
like, yeah, Forley the Weakest, or there was some like guy who was like Bloody Bastard or something. There were a couple of like other names that were just so obvious where it's like, oh yeah, you're like Kill Knife or something like that. It's like, okay, got it. I totally get it. Yeah,
they get better. The name is super loose. I mean, when you get to Age of Madness, you're gonna see some names where like, what the hell are you doing, Joe? But you know, to be fair, you know, everybody credits George R. R. Martin for just being so great with his name and stuff. Like, you do remember he had a character named Shitmouth, okay? So he's not above it either. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, Shitmouth, that sounds like someone from First Law.
yeah. Personally, when I'm writing a first draft, I'm like, this name doesn't mean anything, and I'll put something like Shitmouth or like whoever, or like some character trait, you know? Yeah.
And then it's like, hey, I'm just going to go with it.
Yeah, yeah. And it feels like Joe was just like, yeah, that works. I don't need to rename that guy. That'll stick around.
I am always curious what all of the named men, like what their original names were. Yeah.
And what they did to get those names.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that too. But Logan's the only one that I can imagine has a remnant of his original name. Or Forley, I guess. Forley probably.
You know, when people fan cast these books, I was like, did you guys read it? Because they always want to cast like Jason Momoa or something. So I was like, he's supposed to be ugly as shit, you guys. Mm-hmm. Jason Momoa is not an ugly man. I'm just like, you guys just don't, I don't know. Something that just bugs me sometimes.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a thing where I will cast a character in my head that looks nothing like the author describes, but maybe it's because Joe just drives home to a point so much about his characters that I'm just like, no, that's not how they're described at all. So maybe I'm just a little gatekeeper-y with these characters.
I think that that's real, though, because if you think about, most of these characters are supposed to be reflective of like normal people. And a lot of people are like, oh, it's a movie. You gotta picture it as whatever the hell. And it's like, no. Let's take a step back to reality. Right. This is a nobody, and it should be a nobody.
I do have very good fan castings for a lot of these characters, though. But that's a whole nother thing.
Yeah, but okay, but who are they? Because we've got some in our back.
The guy, I think, forget his actual name, the guy that played the Hound on Game of Thrones, I think he'd be a great Logan because he's ugly, he's huge. You know, I think he could probably play that character. The thing is, I'm just like, he might be playing the same character that he played on Game of Thrones if he does that. I can't think of it. I don't know these actors' names, for God's sakes. He plays Jamie on Outlander. To me, this guy has just like the square jaw. Like, that's Giselle, if I've ever seen it right there. We were watching Outlander. My wife went on. I was like, holy crap, that's Giselle. She's like, what? What are you talking about?
Giselle.
You know, this is the saddest thing I have to tell you guys. I begged my wife for years to read this series.
Mm-hmm.
She finally read book one. She stopped. So I was like, to this day, I still am just so glad she's never read Dune, because if she didn't like it, it'd be like, well, I got to go have papers drawn up. You know, it's like, I don't think I could handle it, you know? So, but she keeps saying she'll go back to it. But the fact that like a lot of people read The Blade itself and they're like, Mike, why do you like this so much? Literally nothing happens. And I'm like, it's very much a character book. It's a character setup book. Part two starts the questing. Part three has all the holy shit moments, you know? And I'm like, it really is one story divided into three volumes, you know? Because, I mean, book two picks up literally where book one ended. So it's a tough sell sometimes when I tell someone, like, you can't say try the first book. You have to tell them, well, try the first two books. And it's like, well, you know, it's a trilogy, so why don't you just go ahead and read the whole thing? You know, but I don't know. It's a tough sell in that regard, because a lot of people will say they want to try book one, and if they don't like it, they'll stop. And God, you just barely, it's like the tip of the iceberg. Book one.
So is there an alternate starting point to this universe?
Well, if you ask any real fan, they would tell you no, just grow up, read the second book, and then get on with yourself. But, you know, I think the core point of the standalones to some degree was to get people into it, or to allow for people to read it.
Oh, the question I get the most, do I have to read the standalones? Yeah, you should watch it.
You should. Yeah, they're incredible.
They're good.
There are very few people that I've ever done this with, but I had someone of whom read the first 100 pages or so, and I was like, you know what? Or they read the first 200 pages, and they were like, I don't know. And I was like, all right, if you want a little bit of convincing, recommended a short story in the short story collection. It's inoffensive. It kind of shows the ability to deliver on things and character writing in action. But then I was like, if not, read the first 100 pages of Best Served Cold. It does a great job of like introducing you to his writing without spoiling or ruining anything until you get later in the series and deeper into that book. But
if you read the prologue to Best Served Cold and you aren't in, I don't know if you like the genre.
I think you should. We should strip you of your right to read, actually.
I was hooked pretty much right away.
That's awesome.
Within the first section of the first book, but
the relief that I felt
on that have talked about how different people have just not liked the sort of seemingly aimless wandering of the first book and the first series in general.
That has me encouraged for doing Dark Tower next, because so many people read Gunslinger and they're just like, I don't know. I don't even know what I read. And that is literally one I have to tell them. If you read it, read book one and two. And if you aren't in at the end of book two, it's probably not for you. But I think book one is very much like the damn prologue for the series. It's like you can't judge the series off of just that book. But it's like people who love that series go back and read Gunslinger, like, oh, this is amazing. It's foreshadowing so much, you know, but first time readers are like, what the hell did I just read? Mm-hmm. And just trust them, but you got to give them two books.
Similarly, I always think in the way that I pitch this series and the way that I pitch The Dark Tower is those first two books, it's a doorstopper. Just think about it like an extra long fantasy book. It's just one super long fantasy book. And then with this, it's like, you got it.
The Lord of the Rings. And Drawing of the Three is shorter than a Brandon Sanderson book.
Much shorter. Yeah. Yeah. Much shorter than Mistborn. Because it's like 200 pages and like 270 or something like that
between those two books. Drawing of the Three is so good.
Yeah. Drawing of the Three is, yeah. Could get into a hole. You can't see it, but over here on my ottoman, I have a like blanket that has all of the Dark Tower books as VHS tapes. It's so cool.
I have a sandalwood gun.
I know. I can see it. It's so good. Yeah.
So I
massive fan. Yeah.
Big, I hope you love it, PJ. I really do.
I'm sure I will.
It's the most original fantasy series I think I've ever. That or Malazan has to be the most original fantasy series I've ever read. Like, as in, like, there's nothing else like it, like, at all.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying that makes it good. I'm saying that, like, you won't ever be like, oh, yeah, this makes me think of this. No, not at all.
Yeah, the closest you'll ever get is just comparing it to The Lord of the Rings because Epic Journey, but, like, what isn't?
So, right. You can do that with probably 95% of every fantasy book I've ever read. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It's all Tolkien's fault in the end.
God bless him.
Yeah. Cool. All right. There was one other question that I had in the back of my head, and it has fallen out. It'll come back to me.
Can I get one in there while you think?
Oh, do it. PJ, yeah, fire away.
So where the series or where the trilogy ended, what characters are you hoping to see more of in the sequel books?
Man, can I just answer all of them?
Okay. That is the correct answer I was looking for, honestly.
I don't think there's a single character that I wouldn't be ecstatic to see more of.
Well, I guess the follow-up question would be, are you going to be resistant if he introduces a bunch of new characters to you?
No. Okay. I have been prepped that that is happening.
Yeah.
So I understand that's happening, but also, like, how quickly I latch on to these characters.
Don't doubt it.
Joe seems to make you latch on to characters very, very quickly.
You'll never be indifferent to any of them. You'll love them, love to hate them, hate to love them, but you'll never just be indifferent about them, I don't think.
Yeah. Yeah. And if I had to choose one character to really look forward to, it's Glockta. Like, I want to see more of him. Knowing that we'll see a little bit into his past is very exciting, but he has a very compelling story. Based on his proximity.
The funniest thing is I didn't read
your guys' faces and I'm going to stop talking.
I didn't read the standalones until 2019. Because I was like, wait, he's writing sequel books this, but it doesn't have this character or that character. I want to read this. That's kind of how I did it for a long time. And then the sequel trilogy got announced and I was so excited. I reread the first law trilogy and I was like, well, I'm going to read these standalones now. And then like I was about halfway through Best Served Call. I was like, this is just as good as those first three books. How stupid am I? You know,
so it's just one book that's as good as a trilogy, you know.
It's great, man. I hope you dig it.
Of the trilogy of books, this wasn't the question, but it popped to mind given what we were talking about. Of the trilogy of books, which stands out as the favorite or the most memorable of them all?
Like I said, it all feels like one story, so it's hard.
Right. I agree, you know.
I guess for me, because you get all the payoff, all the answers, and all the twists, Last Argument would probably be my favorite. God, man, that's like asking me to pick a favorite kid.
Yeah.
It really is. I mean, this, because it is.
Yeah, but who's your favorite kid? You know. You've got
it. A lot of people always say Logan, but Glockta will always be the one just because I never say it's Tyrion done better, I think. And Tyrion's one of the greatest characters in fantasy. That's just how much I love Glockta. Like, I want a Glockta in every series, and I'm never going to get it, you know, because that's just such a fresh and unique character.
I genuinely could not tell you where each of the books ends or starts.
Right, yeah.
I know. And like it really, like, we've said it so many times, but it truly just feels like one story. I could not really definitive, like, I could not confidently tell you at what point Before They Are Hanged ends and Last Argument starts.
I think I can remember where Blade itself ends, but I don't know about Before their Hain, where that one ends, honestly. Yeah.
Yeah, it ends with Glockta and Artie kind of at the hanging. Like, that's not exactly the end scene, but that's their end scene for that, where they hang the ambassador from Gurkul for killing, you know, the other son. So, but that's like one of many, you know. Also, on the other side of things with everyone else, like, we end on the island and they're all pissed off that they traveled all the way across the world.
Oh, yeah, and the seed wasn't a thing. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good end. In my opinion, my favorite is before they were hanged. Personally, I just find that in the end, it has like just such great character growth. On
that's
whole,
the quest book. Really, that's the quest book. I mean, that's what I love quest fantasy. So sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You fall in love with those characters. I think you do for sure in the Blade itself, but like you really deeply like understand their plights more and before they're hanged.
I think maybe I have a hard time with this because I finished Blade itself and I was like, that's one of the most unique fantasy books I've ever read. I'm going to set it down for a little bit and think about it. And I did for about a half day. Whereas literally I finished Before They Were Hanged and like didn't even stop. I picked up the third book and started reading, you know, because I was just not into it. So I don't know. Maybe that's why I have a hard time remembering.
Yeah, that's fair. Because we have you here, Mike, I have to ask, what's your favorite book of the nine?
Oh gosh, probably still Last Argument, but I really love Best Served Cold. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what, maybe it's because I don't want to run this for PJ, but there's just like a character that was just kind of a side character in the original trilogy who really gets a moment to shine in that book. And this character just completely steals the book for me. Amazing character. And you get a POV with this character, and it's just so much fun. It's like hanging out with your favorite drunk relative. I mean, that's to me, that's what it felt like. And it was the best way. Not like that, like the fun drunk. not the abusive, we'll say mean things you drunk, but the one who wants to hug you all the time. That's the kind of the way that it is. I grew to love that character where it was like that became like a top five character for me in the series, the whole series. So that's why that one's always going to be kind of special to me, I think.
I have to agree. Best Served Cold is my favorite for a couple of characters that come back. And just in general, the swings that the story takes. I'm on record and I've put it out there a couple of times. Best Served Cold is my favorite fantasy book I've read in my adult life, I think. I mean, I read The Dark Tower at like 15. So, I get to exclude that from that pile. But
do you think it's a coincidence that I first got into Dark Tower when I was 19? Do you think that was a coincidence?
Ooh.
I'm telling you, the more I hear about 19, the more I'm like, Illuminati's real.
now that you say that, I'm going to have to try to plan the start of our Dark Tower series on the 19th.
Oh, they did a read-along on my Discord, and every month they did a book, and it was always on the 19th.
On the 19th?
I was like, nice. Nice.
He's
like, what are y'all talking about, nerds? That's okay. All these years later, a lot of Stephen King fans still don't know, you know? So it's just one of those weird Kingisms.
PJ, I'm going to throw you a question here. Threads that are left dangling, unanswered questions. Where's your brain going? Where are we going in the future? Beyond like these side characters that you're interested in, where do you see these like countries going? Where do you see the characters going?
Yeah, so that's the cool part, I think, about how this story ends. Knowing that there's many more books in the series, but knowing that, and maybe I shouldn't have known this, but knowing that the point of views are done. All of the dangling threads that I can really think of are primarily either non-POV characters or like the countries as a whole, you know, which it's kind of this cool situation where I get to approach the stories differently than I have in almost any other context, almost any other story that I've consumed, in that like it is completely changing the way that I'm thinking about the continuation. I really want to know more than anything. I think I want to know the precarious sort of relation between the Union and the North with like after Logan's fall, because that seems like it could have a lot of implications, and a lot could kind of unravel with any sort of peace, just by the fact that it's not Jezahl and Logan as dual kings anymore.
I know what PJ's favorite standalone is going to be.
Probably a good bet.
Oh, yeah, fair. That's a good dangling thread. And there's a lot there. I mean, with Dogman being kind of left alone, I think that that does leave kind of an interesting, you know, an interesting place for us to go out on, by and large. Cool. All right. Mike, any final questions? Any final thoughts? Anything you want to tee up for PJ to think about for his long...
Are you guys planning to do like all nine?
Oh, yeah. We're doing all 10 with Sharp End.
Okay. So,
yeah.
You're doing that before Dark Tower?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So we'll be done.
First of all, I'm crazy fucking jealous that you get to do it that way, because, you know, I had to wait years not knowing that there was ever going to be a sequel trilogy, you know, just always kind of just wondering about, you know, what happens, you know, and kind of writing my own ending in my own head kind of thing. And no, it wasn't as good as his. I'll just put it that way. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he should, I'm gonna let him be the writer, but I'm excited that you're going to go through it straight like that. And yeah, I'll be excited to follow that journey.
Your friend that got you into it, when they told you that it was done, the third one was just released. Did you have any feelings about that when you knew that there was more story to come afterwards?
Well, I think at the time, I remember when Best Heard of Cold was coming out, and I was excited, thinking, okay, I'm going to get all these answers. I didn't get the end of the third one. Then I read the synopsis, like, what is this? Who are these people? And I was like, you're telling me that Baez isn't going to get it? God dang it. Yeah, that's kind of how I felt at the time. So I don't know. But that, you know what? We're sick is that same friend hasn't read the sequel trilogy. I'm like, dude, you got me.
Oh, really?
This. What are you doing? Yeah. Like, I just don't really read fantasy anymore. So, you know, I knew that's why I started this channel, because it was like there's so many, none of my real life friends read the stuff I read anymore. You know, so they all read like Clive Cussler and nonfiction crime books and shit now. You know, so.
Boo. The obsession with crime stuff, just I don't get it. I've never understood it.
I still say it was that stupid Serial podcast. After Serial, everyone became obsessed with like unsolved crime books.
It's just like, what is interesting about that? Like, I don't,
That, but like the only nonfiction I read is like JFK assassination stuff, which in my opinion is unsolved. So, what kind of hypocrite am I, you know?
I mean, yeah, unsolved crime or the general like idea there is, I'm so glad that people are interested in it, that like they get to do that on their own.
I'm like, live in the really real world. Yeah. I need to visit other worlds than these, as Stephen King would say. So that's why I bury my head in good old sci-fi fantasy. Yeah.
I'm very excited to continue to kind of read through these to go into the Dark Tower and otherwise. So,
and I'll be anxious to see what PJ feels about the standalones, which ones he likes, which ones he doesn't necessarily, or how he ranks them, I guess. I don't want to say you're going to dislike one.
Yeah.
That's just like most of the feedback I get is just like, book four and book six, people just seem to just be back and forth on those. So we'll see.
Yeah. My heart is not pounding in anticipation as to how you feel about Best Heard Cold, because I've already, you know, personally teed that up emotionally. You're the only one of my friends that will have read it at this point. So, or our friends, I guess, but you know,
we do have a fairly circular Venn diagram of friends.
We do. Again, thank you so much, Mike, for coming onto the show, for chatting with us, and for doing this whole shebang. Where can people find you, or where should people find you? I mean,
I run the like that, run the YouTube channel, Mike's Book Reviews. Been doing that since 2019. Just talk about sci-fi, fantasy, horror. It's kind of what I'm in the mood for. And I'm always looking to try new things, talk to new people and stuff. So I was very, very thankful you guys asked me to come on, and I will beg to come back on when you guys start Dark Tower, because I could have lots to say about Dark Tower. Lots to say.
Yeah, I'm very excited to have you back, and with the Dark Tower, I am absolutely, you definitely have a spot among that that crew and audience.
How fast are you guys reading, just like at your own pace, or are you doing like one a month? Or something like that.
So it's vaguely the way that I've broken it out. The Gunslinger will take about a month. The whole series is going to take about, I think I timed it to 13 months. And that's to give like the longer books time to breathe, more or less, the, you know, wolves and
that's
otherwise.
That's when the hot takes start, is once you get past. Yeah. Once you get to book four, that's when the hot takes start. Yeah.
That's when it begins. But yeah, so I'm excited to kind of get there. So as an actual question, this was a question that I was going to ask. We're gonna take a break after Red Country, I think, just for a single book. And I want to read something that, and I've read nearly all of Stephen King's books, but I'm curious on your thoughts. A number of books are Dark Tower connected, which one would you prioritize of the
Salem's Lot?
Yeah, we already did Salem's that one, Lot. So okay. That's a required. Yeah,
yeah, thing. Salem's Lot. They will get, yeah. get spoiled the shit out of it if you never read it in book five. It completely spoils Salem's Lot. So I tell people that. I was actually surprised on this reread I'm doing Into the Multiverse, where I'm just going through all of his books in publication order. Is the first time I read Insomnia. I had never read Dark Tower, so that book confused the shit out of me. I was like,
Insomnia is getting slotted in the middle of the series. I was like, is
Steven back on the drugs? What is this book? Yeah. You know, but now that I read it after Dark Tower, I was like, oh my God, this solves so many issues I had about stuff that happened in book six and seven. So I started telling people, I think Insomnia is damn near to the point of where it's required reading for Dark Tower.
It's book 6.6 in my mind. Yeah. You know, it's like it's a must read. So I have that one. All right, I need a different rec. those two are covered because those are for sure.
I mean, some people say The Stand just because it introduces you to the Man in Black. But I mean, I'm just like, you don't really need to read a 1,200 page book just to understand that. I mean, I think it helps, sure, but I don't feel like you're really enriching anything in the Dark Tower just because you're like, hey, I know that character because that's a chore. Say, hey, you got to fit in this 1,200 page, which I think you should anyway because it's amazing.
Yeah. Great book.
But some people say Hearts in Atlantis. There are several things in Hearts in Atlantis in there, but no, I think that because it explains the Breakers a little bit. And the Low Men, but no, I think that might be about it. If you really, really like the flashback that's in Wizard and Glass, read the Gunslinger Born, the comic, because it really gets into a lot of stuff that's really glazed over in that story with Roland's first quartet. Mm-hmm. So that's a really, really big deal. I'm so excited for you guys. Anytime you can bring someone new into the Dark Tower Circle, I'm excited for them.
Yeah.
I have my hot takes about things that happened in book six and seven, but it seems like people who didn't have to wait for years like I did between those books, they don't have the same
different
problems.
Feelings.
Yeah, they don't have the same problems. So hopefully,
I get it. My dad and I feel a little bit differently about book six and seven.
Do you like or dislike? And he likes
it? Oh, I love it. He also likes it. He just doesn't like six at all. Like, he's just super.
Fucking hate
space.
Book six.
Yeah. My grandpa.
I was doing my reread, and I was doing it with the people that were reading for the first time, and I was like, I feel like I'm just being a big wet blanket, so I'm just going to stop trying to ruin you guys' enjoyment of book six. So I stopped right there. I still got to do six and seven before I can continue with my Stephen King tier list that people have been begging me for. So.
Yeah, I liked six. I like six more each time I read it, if that makes sense. Like, I was pretty mid on it, especially after Wolves, but I think that it's grown on me over time.
Imagine waiting years and then getting that.
I know. My grandpa, of whom had introduced me to the series, he died in 2004, so I don't even think he got to see the end, but he was pissed at Wolves and then loved Song and was like, I have no idea how this is going to end. How it went.
It's tragic.
But I got to pick it. We got to pick it up and finish it for him. So we've got his copies and everything like that. So
awesome. Awesome. I look forward to you guys' experience with it. It's going to be fun. It's
going to be fun. Cool. All right. Well, sweet. With that, we're starting Best of Cold next week, listeners at home. We're reading all the way up through part one, Westport. We're all the way through that first part.
In case you don't know, the full sentence is, revenge is a dish best served cold. I feel like everybody knows that at this point.